Brian Noonan in for Rowan. Anna, keeping an eye on what's going on in North Korea. The UN Security Council met today. What happened there? What are they planning? What's the reaction? Andy Fields has been covering it all for ABC News, and he joins us now on WGN. Andy, thanks for taking some time this afternoon.
Thanks for having me. This is not a fun way to spend Labor Day weekend worrying about nuclear annihilation.
Yeah, see, and it's not even fun to even try to say it. It's horrifying either way.
No, it's not a word that we've been saying for many, many years, and suddenly it rolls off the tongue uneasily.
So we know that the U.S. ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley, said that Kim Jong-un is begging for war. Who decided to call this meeting of the UN Security Council? Was it just the U.S.? Were other countries involved?
The U.S. actually called for the meeting. You know, they've been doing this for a while, and none of this seems to have had any effect. And Donald Trump has actually put out olive branches here and there. At one point, I think in a speech in the last couple of weeks, he said, look, you know, if Kim Jong-un wanted to talk peace and get rid of the I think he called them the damn nukes, you know, we're happy to talk to him. He said it'd be an honor for us to talk to him. I'm sure it's not an honor, but, you know, he's trying to do something to assuage Kim Jong-un's ego. But nothing seems to work. It's not even clear what North Korea wants with all this saber-rattling at this point.
Well, it seems like it corresponded a little bit with the president and the administration's threat to maybe, you know, we're going to dissolve the trade deal with South Korea. So I don't know. The timing seemed to go along with that. Well, maybe there's some stress between the U.S. and South Korea. Now, as North Korea, we're going to move things along a little bit more and ramp up what has already been, you know, more tests than there have been in quite some time.
Yeah, it doesn't seem likely that the timing is connected with Trump's kind of out of left field saying we may dissolve the trade deal with South Korea, because if indeed this was a nuclear test, and that's what they think it was, those take weeks and weeks and months of preparation to make sure it's safe, to make sure it's underground, that the explosion doesn't put a nuclear fallout into the air. So this has been weeks, if not months, in the planning of this particular test.
So the Security Council today is, again, calling for more sanctions. We've seen sanctions before. How can the sanctions be ramped up where, in their hopes, maybe now Kim Jong-un would start to pay attention to them?
The only way he's going to pay attention is if China actually puts the vice on that country. Now, I think South Korea talked with Vladimir Putin today, and there was a suggestion from Vladimir Putin to cut off the oil supply to North Korea. China is the biggest trading partner with North Korea. They have the most leverage, and it's not clear. They've already said that there will not be a war on the Korean Peninsula, but exactly how you prevent that, because if indeed Kim Jong-un is seriously mentally unstable and not smart as a fox and trying to rattle everyone's cages and fires off one of these things and it lands somewhere and it hurts people, the U.S. may not have any other choice but to respond militarily, and at that point, we're in a lot of trouble.
Agreed. And after the defense secretary yesterday said that, you know, any threat would be met with effective, quote, effective and overwhelming military response. Is there any clarification on what that, how far a threat would have to be? Would it have to be the actual firing of one of these missiles at an ally or a friend?
You know, they are so not specific here. I mean, we can't even get numbers of troops that they plan on sending and adding to Afghanistan. So, and so that's something that was routinely released by the Pentagon and the White House over many administrations, not just Democratic but Republican. And now suddenly that is an issue of state secrecy. So it's very difficult to get details out of this particular administration when it comes to anything specifically on what they might do. And we've also heard these threats now for several weeks, if not months, from President Trump. So, you know, it's unclear. You can talk a tough game when you're in a campaign. You can talk a tough game when you're trying to threaten people and trying to negotiate. But at this point, it doesn't seem like there's any negotiation going on.
And it also seems, you know, sometimes a person can talk tough if they think the other person is going to back down. Kim Jong-un has shown no signs of backing down to any, you know, for decades. He's not paying attention to any sort of diplomacy. He's not paying attention to threats. Is it just going to be the world saying, all right, listen, we understand you're a nuclear power now. We're going to treat you with respect. Do we have any idea what he really wants, what his end game is?
It really is unclear what that is. You know, during, was it the Obama or maybe the Clinton administration? It's hard for me to remember now, but Madeleine Albright had made some overtures to North Korea and tried to, and there was some relative calm for a while, but in the meantime, in the background, they were busy developing missiles and nuclear weapons. So it's unclear whether you can have any serious dealings or even honest dealings in North Korea if indeed when they say, yeah, we're going to stand down for a while, and then in the background they're busy building up.
Mm-hmm. It's now in the, we'll go back to China. In the past, China and Russia have both tried to do kind of a two-pronged approach to dealing with North Korea, where they would say, listen, North Korea, you suspend your nuclear and missile development, and the U.S. and South Korea are going to suspend their joint military exercises. That's never going to happen, correct?
Not at this point. Certainly, the U.S. has to show strength. There was a conversation between the U.S. and South Korea reaffirming the U.S.'s support militarily for South Korea, but you know, that's against the background of the president in the same breath saying that trade deal that we have with you guys, we're going to trash that. So it's kind of hard to say you're our ally in one breath and we think you're an economic opponent in the other.
So where did we leave off at the UN today? What's as people are still talking and the day starts to wind down, where do things stand?
Well, certainly they'll vote for or at least agree on tougher sanctions. But at this point, the sanctions don't seem to be having any effect whatsoever. Kim Jong-un has shown no indication that he really actually cares about the people whose he rules. He shows a lot of concern about keeping his own power. And so a lot of the money and a lot of the aid and certainly trade that goes to North Korea goes to propping up that regime and not necessarily going to helping make the lives better to the people who live in North Korea.
Well, and there were reports from somebody who got out of South Korea, or North Korea rather, that the administration there has a lot of black market dealings to get some of the things that they do need. And, you know, that country is used to suffering. So, as you said, the sanctions aren't working at this point. And if Kim Jong-un can get some of the things he needs, he doesn't care if everybody else suffers.
Well, it's interesting in that the rhetoric, and, you know, we talk about a lot of this here in the United States where President Trump has this continuing mantra of fake news and apparently aimed at ABC and NBC and CBS and CNN and all the legitimate news organizations right out there. And there are a certain percentage of people in this country that believe that we're reporting fake news when, in fact, we have very well-sourced stories and such. It seems that the Kim Jong-un regime does pretty much the same thing there in terms of blocking outside news sources. And the only news you get is Kim Jong-un News Network.
Right.
And so whatever he says and his newscasters, in big air quotes, say, their people believe. And so they're saying terrible things about the United States and that we want to destroy them, which is not the case. Although President Trump's rhetoric may seem that way, it's in response to Kim Jong-un's threats.
Well, we'll see as the days go on what happens if more tougher sanctions. Again, we don't think nothing's going to happen with those. But, Andy, I know you'll be on top of things. Thank you very much for taking some time. Enjoy the rest of your Labor Day trying not to think about, you know, nuclear annihilation. That would be
that would be great.
That would be terrific. Talk to you soon. That's Andy Fields from ABC News. On the other side of the news, we will talk to Gordon Zhang. You've heard him with Roe and Anna before. He is an expert on that region of the world, and we'll talk about, you know, what could actually be done to maybe move things along to get us away from the horror that we seem to be staring down the barrel of right now, unfortunately.
War is never something the United States wants. We don't want it now. But our country's patience is not unlimited. His abusive use of missiles and his nuclear threats show that he is begging for war.
Oh, boy. That is U.N. Ambassador, or U.S. Ambassador to the U.N., Nikki Haley, addressing the United Nations Security Council today. Kim Jong-un is, quote, begging for war. Gordon Chang is the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. He's also a columnist for The Daily Beast, a contributor at Forbes, blogs at World Affairs Journal. And you've heard him here with Rowan Anna before. I welcome him now to the show. Gordon, thanks for taking some time. I hope you're having, other than thinking about this, a nice Labor Day.
I'm having a great Labor Day.
Terrific. Now, we heard Nikki Haley and her proclamation at the UN. Last week, you said that Kim Jong-un is basically giving the U.S. the middle finger. What is it that's seems to be ramping him up lately?
I think Kim Jong-un believes that President Trump is in no position to respond effectively. Also, he looks at Chinese leader Xi Jinping, and he realizes that the Communist Party is in the run-up to its historic 19th Congress, which starts October 18th, and believes that the Chinese also don't want to deal with North Korea. So he saw a window of opportunity to do things such as detonate the nuke, and also we're probably going to see an intercontinental ballistic missile launch pretty soon. And he feels that he can just get away with it.
So that seems to be the case because everybody, even today, the UN Security Council, tougher sanctions. We've got to do tougher sanctions. You've got a country that has been basically isolated for 60 years. They're used to sanctions. What sanctions could actually make any kind of a difference, if any?
Well, we have sanctions on North Korea, and as you point out, for a very long time. But those sanctions actually are not that severe. So what we can do is tighten those sanctions really into an embargo on trade in North Korea. And we can also start working on the countries that trade with North Korea and support it, such as, for instance, China, which has been money laundering for the North Koreans, supplying probably ballistic missile technology, but certainly crucial equipment for the ballistic missile program, as well as providing semi-processed fissile material and other components for the nuclear weapons program. The United States doesn't call China on this. And so, you know, Kim Jong-un looks at this and say, who are those Americans? They may be powerful, but they lack political will. So I think that he believes that he's much stronger than the United States is. And if you look at the history of the relations between North Korea and the United States, they generally get what they want and we don't. So I'd have to say that he's probably correct.
So it's for us to focus on these other countries, that may be the best route. But China's invested in making sure that things stay stable as stable as possible in that region. They would not respond to our sanctions either, would they?
Well, they don't respond to our sanctions now because we have very few sanctions on China. We have imposed very few costs. And so there's very little reason for the Chinese to help us. And that is not a Chinese issue. Yeah, they're bandits and villains, but we have sort of permitted them to do that. So the issue is us, not them. And so when we go forward, what we need to do is impose costs on China that are so severe that Beijing has no choice but to help us.
Do you see a scenario where Kim Jong-un and the United States could sit down? Can negotiations and diplomacy start back up? That seems to almost be down the road. Like it can't. We've passed that point anymore. Is there a point where it could come back?
Yes, I think that there is, and that is when the North Koreans know that they have no choice but to disarm. This is exactly what Ronald Reagan did with the Soviets. Gorbachev realized that it was no use resisting. We need to get ourselves in the same position with North Korea. We have overwhelming national power to do this. It's just that we have not been willing to do so. And so, therefore, it's an issue of American presidents not using American power to protect the American people.
What do you think Kim Jong-un's endgame is?
The destruction of the South Korean state. it is a core goal of the Kim regime, and it's not just Kim Jong-un, but it's his father and grandfather to rule the entire South Korea, the entire Korean Peninsula. And that means he's going to use his arsenal when he's confident of it, and that's probably a year down the road, to blackmail the United States to break our mutual defense treaty with South Korea, get our 28,500 troops off the peninsula, and then he's going to intimidate the South Koreans and eventually absorb South Korea. That's what his goal is. That has been the goal of the North Korean regime from the very beginning. That's what the Korean War is all about. And that war ended not with a peace treaty, but with an armistice. So it still continues.
Talking with Gordon Chang, an expert on the Korean region and the author of Nuclear Showdown, North Korea Takes on the World. Any chance in your experience that Kim Jong-un decides he's had it out, he's going to strike first, he's going to unleash one of these missiles and let the chips fall where they may?
Extremely unlikely. I mean, that does not accomplish his goal of taking over South Korea. I think that he will threaten that, but he won't actually do it, because he realizes if he does it, as Secretary of Defense Mattis said yesterday, the response will be overwhelming and we will completely destroy North Korea. That's not his goal. His goal is to rule the Korean Peninsula.
And that's the way we're working at it. That's not going to happen. What's been the response, or has there been more response from South Korea? I know Japan came out very hard after the missile went over them the last week. South Korea and Japan today, everybody at the UN is talking about tougher sanctions. Is that all they're talking about? Obviously, military action on the back burner, but always at the ready.
Well, in South Korea, Moon Jae-in, the new president, is very pro-North Korean, and he has tried, as President Trump said in his tweet, that, you know, he is an appeaser. But the point is, the North Koreans do not want to be appeased by the South Koreans, at least not yet. And so Moon Jae-in has been hit by reality, and he's actually taken quite a militaristic approach, as we saw from these live fire demonstrations a few hours ago. Also, the other thing that he did was he asked the Trump administration to remove some of the restrictions on our 1979 agreement with South Korea that prevent them from developing missile capability of their own. And President Trump, to his credit, agreed to scrap the payload restrictions on South Korean missiles. We did that this morning. That's a step in the right direction.
Is there, as we look over there and see what's going on, there's been a lot of talk now between the Trump administration about dissolving the trade agreement with South Korea. Is that, in your opinion, is that playing into any of this? Any of Kim Jong-un's decisions to ramp things up? Is it going to strengthen his position because he thinks, well, the U.S. and South Korea, now their relationship might be strained, this may be a better time to amp things up?
President Trump withdrawing from the U.S.-South Korea Free Trade Treaty, which is what he has threatened to do, would be one of the worst things an American president has done with regard to Korea. This is exactly what Kim Jong-un in North Korea wants. It's exactly what the Chinese want. And both of those states want the U.S. out of Asia. So this would be counterproductive. It would be one of, as I mentioned, unimaginably bad for the United States.
Well, and reports are that many of Donald Trump's advisors are saying don't do this. This echoing what you just said, that it would be the worst move possible.
Yes. I mean, if you look at this as purely as a trade agreement, I can understand the impulse to withdraw from the agreement. The South Koreans have not been fair traders. But this is not an agreement about trade. This is an agreement about the U.S. strategic position in Asia, and it's about the maintenance of peace and stability. If the free trade agreement were to be dissolved, it would go a long way to breaking the bonds between the United States and South Korea, and it would embolden both the Chinese and the North Koreans to take steps that could lead to history's next great conflict. So I believe that if President Trump were to do this, he would be judged very harshly by history, because there really would be very few good outcomes from such a move.
Now, Gordon, you mentioned earlier that you think there's going to be another, the possibility of another missile launch is coming up. Where do you think this is going to go? We know the Security Council is going to vote on stronger sanctions. Those will be put in place, perhaps sanctions against some other countries, as we talked about earlier. Where do you see this going in the next couple of days and in the next week?
I think it's extremely hard to figure out where this is going because I don't know what the Trump administration will do. The Trump administration has some impulses which actually could solve this peacefully. They've got some impulses which I think are very destructive. I don't know who's going to win out in those policy deliberations in Washington. So it's very difficult to say whether they will make the right moves or not. But I can say that by putting North Korea at the top of the agenda, this is a necessary precondition for success. We haven't seen North Korea at the top priority for a very long time. So at least the president deserves credit for that. I hope he makes the right moves, because if he does, we could see peace and stability and a much better Asia. If not, this could really be an ugly scenario.
Give us a couple of the moves that would be positive and then one or two that would go the other way.
I think a positive move would be, as I mentioned, to take Bank of China, which is one of China's largest financial institutions, declare it to be a primary money laundering concern under Section 311 of the Patriot Act. In other words, deny its use of dollars around the world. This would essentially be a death sentence for Bank of China, but it would show the Chinese that for the first time in decades that an American administration was willing to take costs in order to protect the American people. And besides, we cannot allow Chinese financial institutions like Bank of China to be money laundering and basically committing crimes using U.S. financial system. If we were to do that, Beijing, I think, would start to move in the right direction. One of the worst moves I think the Trump administration could do would be preventative war. Preventative war is an attempt to prevent the North Koreans from getting the capability of threatening Americans, because this would be a war where you would have at least hundreds of thousands die in the first couple days, perhaps tens of millions. This could be history's most deadly conflict, and it would be very difficult to control, and we could end up on the other side of a war with China if the Trump administration were to do something like this. The Chinese have told us they'll come in on North Korea's side if we do this. And we ignored warnings like this in 1950, and we found out what happened then. The Chinese made good on their word. They ended up on North Korea's side, and that has led to the stalemate that persists to this day.
Well, that's a rosy picture to think about on our Labor Day, Gordon. Thank you for all the information. I know we'll be talking to you again very soon. Again, thanks for taking some time on your holiday.
Oh, well, thank you so much.